2002 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium presents session number 354, Our Adventures Among the Mormons, an interview with Kanadi Seshashari, conducted by Levi S. Peterson.
Brief introduction. Kanadi and Neela Seshashari immigrated to the United States in 1969. Sesh had a position at Weber State as a tenure-track position as an assistant professor. And Neela, finishing a doctorate at the U of U in the early 70s, entered on a tenure-track position at Weber State in about 1976. And so both have been for many years respected professors of English at Weber State, much admired and respected by their students. Both achieved signally in other areas. Sesh was a very able administrator, particularly as chairman of the English department, where he ruled for 11 years, and a very long tenure in that position, and he was a good chairman. And Neela, as editor of Weber Studies, to which she often recruited authors of national repute. So both became well-known in Mormon circles in northern Utah, as well as non-Mormon circles. Both have served in many public capacities. Sesh served as president of the Association for Mormon Letters for a year, and Neela, at the time of her death, was president-elect of that organization. Our purpose in this interview will be partly to elicit from Sesh a kind of retrospective on the careers of both him and Neela. Also, I hope a look at the quality of their spirituality as Hindus. Going forward then with questions for Sesh and asking him to respond. And if, incidentally, some of you are burning with a question, we'll ask it, and we'll ask Sesh to entertain that too. Hopefully there'll be time at the end for formal questions if you wish to make them. Now, Sesh, you told me that your mother had and grandfather had a couple of words for you that seemed a contradiction to your present affable and peaceful personality when you were a child. Would you like to go into that a bit?
You know, can you hear me now? Is that, yeah. Levi asked me if there were any areas that were out of bounds. I said, no, my life has been an open book. Nothing is really out of bounds. And what I was referring to, Levi, is this. There are two Sanskrit words. One is called Mundi. Mundi meaning obstinate. I was obstinate as a boy growing up. It came out of my sense of how I felt about certain things. If you feel strongly about certain things, you end up being obstinate. The other one that he's referring to, which is a loaded word, is Murkha. And once my woken up practically every morning at 4 a.m. I'm a Brahmin. Brahmin means one who follows, seeks Brahma, who's God. And he woke up me up when I was 4 and 5, and we were visiting his and grandma's place.
This was your grandfather, right?
Grandfather. And when I were not with them, you know, my mother would do the chore, waking up all the boys at 4. It's a good time to read. That's a habit that stayed with me a lifetime, especially for grading. If you have to grade, I would wake up at 4. He was telling me how to do a square root of a given number. Just imagine, a 5-year-old kid, and I didn't do it rightly, and he called me a murkha. And he was saying, so much of God's universe has symmetry, design. A basic understanding of arithmetic and mathematics are very, very necessary for your salvation. If you don't understand the pattern that undergirds this creation of ours, I'm concerned. This is exactly what my mother did when I was about 16 or so. I refused to go see Gandhi, who was passing through, the great Mahatma Gandhi, who was passing through my town. Because at 16, I believed that the British should be thrown out of India at the point of a bullet. I said, those rascals did not belong here, do not belong in here. The sooner we get rid of them, the better. And no better way of doing this than at the point of a bullet. That's how I felt. I said, I'm not going to go see him. And she called me a murkha. You know, you are refusing to go see one of the greatest human beings ever and to be in his presence, have his darshan. I am kind of concerned for your salvation. That's what Neela is referring to. And as a little bit of a footnote, that stayed with me, and my book on Gandhi, in a way, is my making peace offering. That is, I needed to sort myself out, and that book was the result of a deep soul searching. I am not.
Sesh, tell them what the incident that changed you from a kind of approach, seeing violence as the way to eject the British to.
Well, a couple of years later, Gandhi was assassinated in 1948, and it shook me as nothing else did. It cinched me. I'm one of those people who is impacted by great gurus. One of my other great preceptors was President David O. McKay. I'm going to come to that. I fasted for 3 days. I cried uncontrollably. Must have been a religious experience. And I didn't eat. My mother tried to force feed me. I said, no, I need to go through this. And she was a very not indulgent, but she knew what to do, when to do. She knew this is the time to leave him alone. And it was a kind of a cataclysmic moment for me in my life. And then, since then, I have been nonviolent. I tread in the path of peace and nonviolence. That does not mean I'm a pacifist. Pacifism means not doing anything. It's a Christian version of quietism. My nonviolence means you've got to do something positive, but not use violence as a means for achieving change.
So. But and when you were in graduate school here at TU, though, you did your doctoral dissertation on the relation of Thoreau and Gandhi. Isn't that correct?
Yeah.
And that emerged later as the book you spoke of.
Yeah, it did. You know, you're finding things that are common. I've done work on Thoreau, a kindred spirit. And just as a footnote, whenever Gandhi wanted to break a law where the British enforced censorship, you know what he did was he printed a copy of the essay on civil disobedience. What greater? Now, Gandhi had an extraordinary sense of history. And he carried a copy of the essay on civil disobedience, he did. And my work, published work on Martin Luther King also stems from the same kind of involvement or engagement. That is, the moral and ethical context and frames for action in human life, especially in politics. So those are the things that drive me.
Sesh, before we leave entirely the area of your childhood, didn't you tell me once that you, as a small, fairly small child, you went on a hunger strike?
I've done lots of things. You know, it's a very important thing. You know, you wouldn't... I've written about it, too. I don't know what it was. I was a kid of eight, and I went on a hunger strike. I said, I'm not going to be eating. And I've always felt strongly about things that are right and things that are wrong. And Neela did that, too. She did it more remarkably than I did in some of these cases. I'm going to mention a few instances perhaps later. And I did was I went on a hunger strike, and that evening when I when my mother said come for dinner, I did not. I discovered that she was also on a hunger strike. My mother. And I said, you know, why are you on hunger strike? She said, it takes two to play this game. And she said, I'm not eating unless you eat. I'm going to be on a hunger strike until you eat. And I had no response to that. You know, like a dog, you know, tucking its tail behind, you know, I just ate and she ate and we hugged and we cried. I learned my basic lesson then that hunger strike could also be coercive in a way that's very, very negative. You can't go on a strike against people you care for and love. It needs to be against some evil. It can't be against some good. So that was another instance that you guys are referring to here.
Turning now to your graduate school, your experience in graduate school here in at the U of U. You arrived in 1959, I believe, a Fulbright, right?
That's right.
Why did you choose the University of Utah when you actually had several choices?
Yeah, I had several choices, and the only American I knew in India was Professor William Mulder. He was on a Fulbright visit. When he was there, I showed up in his office and I said, you know, as planned to do my degree, I was going to work on John Dos Passos. And we talked and others. When I got my Fulbright, I wrote him a long letter to say, I want to go to Harvard because of this. I want to go to Columbia because of Lionel Trilling. I want to go to some other school because of that. And he wrote me a long letter. He said, the place to be is here. This is the place for you because... So I asked for University of Utah, and I never regretted a day. I'm as much... This is in 59 through 2002 is more than half my life. I have been at Utah, and people called me and Neela Dryland Mormons, and we have read papers and published.
What were your reactions, though, to Mormonism when you arrived in Utah in 1959?
You know, I'm going to recommend, this is in the winter of 94 issue of Dialogue. Neela has a very splendid piece on calling uprooting and rerouting and immigrants, escapades, and Mormon Utah. And I just want to read a paragraph because it will context what we are doing. And I got you're talking of Levi in 59 or 69. I want to...
I was talking about your arrival here as a graduate student in 59.
Yeah, 59. Well, the only thing I had heard was from Dr. Mulder. I had read his book, Homeward to Zion, the classic on Scandinavian immigration to Utah. But I didn't know much except for the fringe things, eccentricities. There's different kinds of people. And when I was in grad school with the first grad party, I think a friend that Levi and I, by the way, were in grad school together, took classes together, did things together. There's this Jack Scoville, I think. 59, BYU was having a very bad year in football, and they were not known. And then Jack came and said, "Sesh, do you know why BYU is not winning a game?" I scratched my head. I said, "I don't know." "Oh, because for every 10 yards they make, they have got to give one to the Lord." You know? Everybody was laughing. And I was the only one who was not laughing. And I said to myself that if I'm going to be here, I cannot be outside of a joke. You need to be inclusive. I see Will Bagley here. Yesterday we met in the boys' room, and then we were talking, and then he said to me, "Oh, I'm on the deck next." I knew exactly what he meant. Because if you don't know what it means to be on deck next, if you scratch your head and say, "That's a definite article missing there, there's something wrong." You need to be, language is very crucial. Jokes are very crucial. And then I said, "No, I'm going to have to get involved." And the first book somebody recommended to me, I didn't know much, was Fawn Brody's No Man Knows My History. This was 59. I didn't know. I looked through the thing. It was in the old Thomas Library. It was in a secluded, sequestered area. It was under lock and key. And the lady looked me up. She even had a frown on her. And but like the education of Henry Adams, this education of Seshachari. So I just sat there through the day and read the book. And
you told me you took Thomas O'Day's class too.
I did
took
Thomas O'Day's class in the sociology of religion. You know, several of you may know Neil Lambert, Dick Craycroft, and others who are luminaries of our state here. They were all class fellows. I took that class. And then, you know, religion was in me. When our mutual director of our graduate doctoral program, Don Walker, said to me, "Sesh, you're doing all these things. Why don't you choose a class for fun that you want to take that does not concern your program?" He was slowly nudging me into taking the history of the jazz. But I chose instead the history of early Christian art. It was a marvelous class, marvelous class. And in the same time, as a part of this, I attended every half-yearly conference. The tabernacle, it was a small group, intimate group. People brought their little lunch sacks and sat there. And it was a thrilling experience to be in the presence of President David O. McKay. And I asked myself several times, if this man is not a man of God, who else? He was charismatic. He was extraordinary. I have lots of experiences from those days. The family I stayed with, very affectionate, very fond. We still visit them. They still call us. They are into their 80s. There are different kinds of things happening. But one thing, let me tell you, two other things that stand out. I was asked to come and speak to a class, religious class. Yes. Not a class, maybe a group that was meeting at Westminster. The topic was, what does Christianity mean to me? I gave a 40-minute, what I thought was a brilliant lecture on Christianity, It was based on the Sermon on the Mount, turning the other cheek. It was Gandhi's way of looking at Christianity. I spoke about what it means, Christ on the cross, compassion, agape, and all of this, unselfish love. But the end of it, the instructor said, we know it differently, don't we? The heart of Christianity is the original sin. It's disobedience. It's the fall of Adam and Eve. You know, it just kind of did things to me. I said, there's something else I need to look into. And then within 2 weeks after that, I'd not know, many of you might know Fred Buchanan. He asked me to come speak to a seminary class. And Benyon Lowell was in charge of the class.
Yeah. Lowell Benyon,
I'm
right.
Sorry, Lowell Benyon, the other way, dyslexic. The topic was talk about Hinduism. It was such an extraordinarily different experience. The class was open, class was eager, and Lowell Benyon knew the Gita, he read the Gita, he talked about it. There was so much good feeling. It was a learning, teaching situation. Not as the other one where you wanted to trump somebody's ace. That was, so several things led me to. So it's
Sesh, before we leave it all together, your reference to a president of the church, President McKay, leaping way ahead, you've told me that you have conversed personally with President Hinckley.
Oh, yes, of course. Then it's, oh, yes, of course. That's not what I mean. A 10-minute conversation, thanks to President Rodney H. Brady and Mitzi Brady. Neela and I were at the dedication of the new Salt Palace. And we were talking with President Brady, and then President Brady said to me, I'm going to introduce you to my boss. I said to him, you have no bosses, because just the previous week he had been made the head of president and CEO of Deseret Financial Corporation or something or the other. I said, no, I have a boss too. He turned me around and he marched me toward, there I saw, was President Gordon B. Hinckley. He was 87 then. And let me tell you, we talked, and he said to me, where do you come from? I said, Hyderabad. I know the place. And he said, just 3 months ago, this is an 87-year-old person, 3 months ago, there was a 4-page article on your hometown in Ensign. Did you read that? You know, I had been supplied copies by so many people to say, Sesh, this is your hometown. And I had read it, and he pulled that out of his memory. And 3 months later, at one of these Little America, I think, there was a huge banquet recognizing several people, and one of them was Neela. And President Hinckley was the keynote speaker, presided over by Governor Leavitt. And when Neela's turn came to accept the award, a plaque, President Hinckley said to her, I spoke to you about 3 months ago. Did I not? She said, yes. You know, he could, has a remarkable computer filing system. I think he just pulled this card. He's a very, he is an extraordinarily gentle, gracious person. And I would rank him as somebody it would be worthwhile my own emulation. You go through life wondering, you know, into whose footsteps you walk. And so he's an extraordinary person, too.
Moving on to Neela now a bit, Sesha. When you and she, for you it was a return to Utah in 1969. Mm-hmm. Sesh went back to India in 64 with a PhD, taught there, married, and then in 69 returned to take the position at Weber State. Neela came with him. And afterward, was also received a position at Weber State. But I think the culture shock was for her at that point rather than you. And I think you were going to do something.
You know, I was going to say in the this volume, 94 Winter, there is a piece by Neela. You must read it because it's an immigrant's view on rerouting in another culture and the things that she faced. And she writes here when in a conversation in India, Bill Mulder was talking about polygamy, and Neela asked a question about, is polyandry allowed in Utah? You know, no. Women need to marry one at a time in sequence, but men could, you know. So Neela was already into, I don't think feminism as such. Whenever she saw injustice or prejudice, she would tell me, that should be the first time you ever see one of those things, should be the last time you ever confront it. And I remember when I was 5 years old, this is January, within 2 weeks, 3 weeks of her coming, because she wore a slack to school. She was sent home on a very cold day. This is in January of 70. And Neela, this is Lauren for elementary school. Principal Handley was there. She dragged her across the street. Same thing, you know. And she dragged her across the street, and she sorted she put him straight about cold and children and how to deal with this. Little things. When we went to R.C. Willey to buy our furniture, we bought the thing, and then she was about to sign. She said, no, your husband needs to sign for you. And they said, what do you mean my husband needs to sign it for me? I bought it. I'm paying for it. They said, no. And then she said, then you can keep your stuff. I knew the sales manager, Larry Spencer, he sorted that out by the little changes. And when she found out that my ZCMI card had a credit ceiling of $2,000 and her card has a credit ceiling of $400, this was about 74, 75, she came home, picked up the telephone, and called the general manager of ZCMI downtown Salt Lake. And she said, I have the same degree, same job, same university. And why this discrimination? Is that because he's male and I'm not? And the general manager said, I'll call you back in about half hour. He did. And the only conversation I heard was Neela at this end said, thank you. He had raised her credit limit to 2,000. You know? You know, very many things. In Ogden, this is Weber School District. One of our students, early 70s, was asked to resign because she got pregnant. You know, teachers were not supposed to get pregnant. And she was talking, this is at the store, Smith's grocery store. She came home and called Superintendent Taggart. She asked him a straight question. Where did he think he came from? You know, was it on one of those acts, original acts? You know, so she's little things. This was Neela. But what I want to read in here is, never has she nor I, for us, religion has meant values, moral, ethical. When our daughter, with the same 5-year-old daughter, when she was 6 or 7, she wanted to go to primary. And then we had a little meeting, and then she told me she has got to get her value system from some place to the other. You can't be in this culture. Sometimes, you know, I would scratch my head and say, you know, this politics sucks. She said to me, do you want to go home? That was here, for instance, she's saying, I want to read this. This is at the home of the American consul. This is, everybody was a background from America. She says, well,
this is in India, right?
This is in India. She says, I had made friends. Neil and I invite you to a party at our home in the United States next Christmas. The announcement had predictable response of a contemporary TV sitcom. Raising their many heads as one, they asked in a chant, where or where in the USA? Utah, said Sesh, with a flourish and a big smile. Oh, they sighed, as their heads started falling on their chests. There was a general despondency for a few minutes, and then suddenly commotion. Everyone asked questions or made comments at the same time. Everyone was agitated. My friend, mind my right, this is Libby Mathis. This is the consul's wife, Libby Mathis. Her husband, Don, was the consul. Looked at me in consternation and said, is not that the place where the Mormons, her voice trailed off involuntarily and her hands went up from the forehead in circular sweeps, tracing the shape of horns, and her eyes went round and wild. I was flabbergasted. When I shook myself out of my momentary consternation, I found Sesh gallantly fielding questions hurled at him from all around. More strangely, he, a citizen of India, was defending Americans from other Americans. Both Neela and I have written defending Mormonism or not making a case for Mormonism, but trying to explain. That is, if there are these good people, if something is working for them, if the value system is good, you know, if they don't drink and do drugs and don't smoke, if they have dreams for their children very much like the dreams that we have for ourselves, there's something that is ticking. And this has helped us. Leva, do you have a question? A great deal at the university, because we told our students, both she and I, you must empower yourself as writers. The best way of empowering yourself is to not self-marginalize yourselves. You need to be who you are, what you are. Don't be somebody else. Don't ape somebody else. It is out of your own depths that great writing, good writing, is going to come out. And the students have always sought us out, because sometimes LDS students in the university feel very, very defensive because they've got all these weird ideas. No. And somebody came and said to me, could I write a paper on Emerson and King Follett's discourse? I said, it's a beautiful topic. About the same time, same kinds of things. It's the perfectibility of the human race, you know, in Emerson's essay on nature, and of course in King Follett's discourse, you know, God was as we were, we are, and we shall be as God is. That remarkable thing.
You told me, Sesh, that you have had Mormon students ask you whether they should go on missions, and after talking to them, you told him yes.
Yeah, you know, this is one of the things. If you're a teacher, you end up being counselors and advisors. Neela and I, as outsiders, insiders, outsiders, whatever the term, we have helped our students find their voices. I did not know until about 8 or 9 months ago, all the lesbian students would come to me for advice, and gays would go to Neela for advice. We didn't know this was happening, because students would come and talk to us in confidence. We kept confidentiality. We didn't. I would mention a name, Kathy Kendall, a lesbian at the national level. She's the attorney for the Lesbian Association. She's on the TV all the time. She flew in from San Francisco when she came to know Neela was gone. She outed herself to me, and similarly to Neela. And there would be our students having problems with their parents, having problems with the institute, with the instructors of the institute. And we would, it's like catching a fish and throwing the fish back into the water. They need to, our advice as always was, you need to blossom, you need to flower where you are planted. You need to be who you are. And it's not something you swap overnight and try to go in search of another butterfly of a dream. No. So we've worked very closely with the thing. Recently, we had a letter, moving letter from a stake president in the East to say that he found his faith in Neela's class. This is a person, this is a stake president, big time, important stake in an important city. He said, I found my faith in Neela's class. I also remember another incident. She was teaching an essay, a story, I think, another Timothy by Walter Kern. When the student went to Levi, who was the chair of the department, complaining that Dr. Seshachari was preaching Mormonism in class. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
And then Levi was so shocked. He said, no, she's not even LDS, you know. So we need to relate. Are there things in Mormonism we don't relate to? Of course. But that's not the thrust of our thing, that we need to go through understanding and helping people as others have understood Neela and me and our children and have helped us.
Sesh, tell us a bit, in her later years, as many of you know, and perhaps all, Neela became a Hindu priest, not simply in the informal way that many Hindus do, but she became a registered official in Weber County who could perform marriages. And she did. She performed marriages and frequently conducted ceremonies. Would you tell us a bit how Neela evolved into this kind of activity?
Okay. Neela knew Sanskrit, which is the language of the gods. If so, she knew the scripture. She could read it. She had Sanskrit for a minor at the master's. And she was a Brahmin, meaning the priestly class. From generation to generation, she had belonged to that class. And so friends here in the valley would occasionally say, would you perform a Thanksgiving ceremony at my place, or would you do this ritual or that ritual? So on a trip to India, she bought a book called Self-Taught Priest. Do it yourself. All the text was there. She could read it, and why not? And Hinduism does not prohibit women priests. And she used to perform all these. And one, this is several years ago, the son of a friend of ours, they had a divorce. He'd gone to Boulder for his education, and there he met a girl with a Jewish background, and they decided they would go to a rabbi and ask them to wed them. And the rabbi said no, because he was not a Jew. As a matter of fact, he was nobody. He had no religion. He just grew up. Vijay had seen, and then he came to kneel. They came to kneel, and then they said, "Would you perform our wedding? You know, Jewish and then Hindu." And then Neela said, sure, of course. You know, Neela was never too shy away from a challenge. She had been doing other things. And she did. And then after the kids went, I said, Neela, I think you need to get a license. You need to be permitted. That was a breeze. She called Linda Lunsford, the county recorder, and she explained. And she said she would have a letter in the mail. She did. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful wedding. She merged Western, Eastern, and everything compacted in 45 minutes. And not only that, in everybody's seat, she had the whole steps. The translations were in English, the verses were in Sanskrit, and people had tears. And would you believe, in the audience was our daughter Priya. And when she and Michael Sanger, part German, part Irish, part Scandinavian, I call part confused. You know, when they wanted to get married, they flew in on Mother's Day and they asked Neela to perform the wedding. And Neela was flabbergasted. But she said, yes. And she told me that she does not want to cry there. She was going to do all the crying in advance, which she did. But, you know, her career as a priest took off, cross-cultural or poor Hindu weddings. She performed weddings in Detroit. She performed wedding in the historic Concord Congregational Church. And she had three more slated for this summer and fall, and those are not to be. And she put in a lot of effort. She performed meaningful weddings. Very remarkable. That was another aspect, you know.
Sesh, so once some years ago, Neela, you and Neela invited us to a number, among others, my wife and I, to the ceremony that I think you called the 13th day ceremony for Neela's mother. Neela's mother had died. And Neela, there, as I recall, there were flowers, I think a picture not only of Neela's mother but of her father too. Mm-hmm. And there were candles, and then Neela performed some recitations. What was the purpose of that?
The purpose basically is this. It's an answer or response to what happens to the soul. Immediately at the point of death, does the soul bolt with the speed of lightning to go wherever it goes or it's supposed to go? The Hindus traditionally have said that the soul that is body bound for life still has is still earthbound, because you have got your husband, your children, or wife and kids, your bank account. You got all these little hooks that are into the soul. They picked a date and said it takes 12 days. On the 13th day, the soul, it's a part of the ritual, the soul sets itself free from its human earthly bondage and bounds. And this ceremony, to which Leva and Althea were there, so was the 13th day ceremony that Neela performed for her mother, which said, "You are free now, go." And on Neela's 13th day, I said a prayer to myself. I said, "Go wherever you're supposed to go. I'll take care of the children. I'll take care of myself." I said, "Keep an eye on us, but above all, keep an eye on the world, because this world needs to be kept an eye on the way things are. I said, it's a way of saying there is a separation now. The bonds that bound you to the earth are no more. So that's the 13th day ceremony that we have.
Would you mind sharing with us the disposition of Neela's ashes? Tell us about that.
You know,
if it's difficult,
no,
don't.
No, it's, you know, talking about her helps me. She went so suddenly. I rushed her to the hospital on a Thursday. She was misdiagnosed totally. And she had a tiny rupture of the aorta. Now the pathologist tells me, very good at the examiner's office, state examiner's office, nothing could have helped her. It's a rupture of the ascending aorta. It supplies blood to the brain, nothing could have. But anyway, it ruptured and it kind of sealed itself. And she had beautiful days. A Friday and a Saturday, she received people, talked to people, sat at the computer, did things, and but on Sunday, this was typical Neela, at 3 a.m. When she woke up, she asked me, do you remember the title of the book that on Vietnam that we read? You know, she's not talking of kids, she's not, Neela is still thinking books. This is the intellectual part of her. I said, I don't remember. I remember the author, this Andrew X. Pham. She said, it has mandala in it. I said, I agreed. And she said, is it solid mandala? I said, no, that's Patrick White. It's not. You know, within 30 seconds, she said, oh, it's catfish and mandala. I said, that's it. And to give you this little, at 6:30 when you woke up, Neela, every morning, it was a ritual. She stood on the scales. I would tell her, once in 2 weeks is plenty. No, Neela. On the 13th of December, 69, her first full day in this country, she stood on the same scales. She was 121 pounds, tall figure, 121 pounds. I said to Neela, by the end of the year, you're going to be 141 pounds. They have come to the land of honey and milk and hamburgers, you know. That morning she asked me, she said to me, sweetheart, guess how much I weigh? I said, 121 pounds. And she said, on the dot. That was Neela. And we had our tea and she felt a little sleepy. I walked her to the bed. She sat down and I put my arm around her and straightened out the pillow. Her eyes were about 6 inches apart and nudged her. The eyes rolled back into the socket and she was gone. She's gone. And what Levi is referring to is Bear Lake was one of her very favorite lakes, the bluest of blue lakes. We had a timeshare there for almost 25 years or more. And we had the family, close friends. We took the ashes and with my two daughters on either side and with me, we just immersed the ashes. It was covered with a lot of rose petals. And one of the things that was bothering me at the back of my mind was, what if it washed back onto my... We walked almost thigh deep. But lo and behold, the rose petals all flowed toward the deep end. And the ashes we could see, it was a blotch, all flowed toward the deep end. Our good friend Carolyn Nebuchadnezzar says, the water in Bear Lake flows from the Idaho end to the Utah end. And we were at the Idaho end. And then, you know, it's so... This is... She had her heart in the people, in the culture, in the mountains. That was a spot where she and I had spent hours together. watching birds, identifying birds. It was a bird refuge. And I still remember the third day after she came, she said to me, "What do we have by way of culture here?" I said, "We have the symphony in Ogden and a symphony in the Ballet Association." And on Monday morning, we were there getting our season tickets, the rest of the season. Because she said to me, quoting in Latin, she said to me, "Art is long and life is short." And in her case, it proved to be too short.
We have 5 short minutes. Would you like to ask a question or two of Sesh? If you would, I would prefer you come up and say it into the mic. Please.
Why did you pick Utah to come to?
Why did you pick Utah? The question.
You know Professor William Mulder? He was a professor, of distinguished professor at the University of Utah of English and American Literature. He was a visiting Fulbright professor in 1957 in my home university in India. He is the only American I knew by name, not by name, but in person. And so when the time came, he was the one I wrote to, and he recommended that I come to Utah. So I did come, and then these were the days I was a for 3 years, I got the A.A. Alpin pre-doctoral fellowship. So that was basically the reason.
Another question? Anyone care to ask it? Please.
When you returned to India, Sesh, why did you then decide that you wanted to come back?
Yeah.
The question is, why did Sesh choose to come back after having returned?
The reason being, Neela and the children had not been here. And then originally, you know, both she and I had tenured jobs at the university in Hyderabad, Usmania University. And we thought we would come here for a couple of years to give everybody a taste of America and the U.S. But as things happen, you know, when you come with kids, you sink roots. And then you attend PTA, you get elected PTA president, and, you know, you bake cookies for the PTA. But I want to tell you, this was the first English department meeting. Neela was asked to bring cookies to a departmental meeting. This was 75, and this is the wrong person to do. And then Neela said to Floyd Whitfield, "Floyd, why don't you bring the cookies? I'll bring the punch." That stopped that, you know. A couple of things I think I need to add here. There are 4 children of our students who have been named after us, 2 after me and 2 after Neela. And 2 of them that have been named after me are LDS in very good standing.
And peaceful.
And peaceful. And peaceful. And graduates of BYU. They are in the Valley. And then
the name is Sesha, right?
Sesha, yeah. And 2 who have been named after Neela, they're called Neela, but both of them are non-LDS. But both of them have graduated from outside the state universities and doing things. So there are role models, you know. When Levi said peaceful, he meant, you know, the ones after me are more peaceful than the ones. Neela was an activist in the cause of justice. She said, the essay, when some students asked, she says, "Be a good Mormon. You need to be a good Mormon. Not wander away or do other things. If that's what you are, who you are, be a good one." And but Neela was an activist. With whenever she, as she said, the first time you meet an injustice or a discrimination should be the last time you ever face that.
Okay, one more question, please.
Say
So the question is, how did you adapt so well to Mormon culture?
I spoke earlier of when I first came, my basic influences like President David O. McKay and a few others. But there's another reason. One of the panels that on religion that Neela did the week before she passed away, she mentioned something very important. Everybody talks of tolerance. Neela said, tolerance is not the right thing. Tolerance means you simply tolerate, much like you tolerate a leper. You can tolerate lots of people. But she said, you need to go beyond tolerance to respect. You must respect religions. You must respect people for who they are, what they are. And Neela and I have had this extraordinary respect for all religions. But it's easy to respect NLDS. The thrust of my point was they're good people, good values, good background. And in this essay that I was mentioning, Neela talks about the Mormon community. If you ever have to have a disaster, no better community than a Mormon community to be in. There are so many hands reaching out. The house that we lived in, the basement got flooded because something broke. And the whole ward was there, bringing out everything. And Neela was preparing sandwiches. And then when she took sandwiches, they were bringing out the scotch, the whiskey, the beer bottle, everything from the basement. And Neela was, she said, Sesh, I'm so sorry for the Carlisles because this is like outing them. They're such good people. And then she was traumatized until at 8 p.m. came home and I said, Neela, I've got some good news for you. The Carlisles are not LDS. Oh, my God. And she said, let's drink to that.
thanks very much.